interviewing for the oral history project Faith Campbell at her home in Noble, Hurricane 1992. I am Bob Steck. With your full name. We're set.
I am Faith Stratton Campbell, and I was born in Wisconsin, and I migrated east.
What part of Wisconsin?
Lived at the very head of Lake Superior in a city that was at that time between 25 and 30,000, called Superior. And it was an industrial place. It had lots of shipbuilding during World War I. It was a place from which grain was shipped from the Dakotas, and coal was brought up from Pennsylvania and New York, and so that there was shipping all the time while the lake was open. Very cold, like today.
What brought you east?
I came east to Smith College, which was a family college. All my cousins had gone there too. And went home for about 3 years after college, and then came back and got a job in New York. And that was during the Depression. I was very lucky, and of course it didn't pay much, but it was enough so I could stay.
What was your field of work?
The job I wanted, I finally got, and that was in the editorial department of Vogue magazine. And I had worked while in Superior at the local newspaper and had written a shopping column that was really patterned on Vogue style. And I'd also worked for several stores writing their ads so that you could say that I had my own advertising agency there. And finally I realized that if I were going to go ahead at all, I'd better get back east where there was more work of the kind I wanted. So one of my jobs before the Vogue job was on a Junior League magazine in the editorial department.
And when were you introduced to this area?
And came up to, well, my mother's family had been Connecticut people, so I knew the area around New Haven very well. And my second husband, David Campbell, had gone to Yale, and his family had lived in the Harwinton area for a while. And we both decided that when he retired and when I retired that we would like to come to Connecticut, especially this area, because we'd been up for weekends at Lenox. And we decided that this was the best place. And Dave, having been a banker all his life, got all of the town reports, the annual reports, and looked them over, and he decided that the town of Salisbury was the best run of any in the northwest corner. So this was where we looked for a house. And our first house was on Doug Way. I won't say Doug Way Road, I'll say Doug Way, the old name of it, right near the bridge that went across to the power plant and Falls Village. And we were in the Falls Village postal area and in the Canaan telephone area, but we paid our taxes in the town of Salisbury.
Was it called Amesville at that time?
And Amesville was the name of that area.
Mm-hmm. And what year was this?
And this was, we bought the house in the fall of 62, and then came up weekends and vacations and moved in, took it as our residence in 1964. The house we had was one that had been built in 1857 and had been built as a store, and it was one of the Greek Revival buildings.
Did you say Greek Revival?
Yes. Uh-huh. Huge, white, with pillars that went up to the roof, and an upstairs porch as well as the downstairs front porch.
Is that
on the portico?
Is that house still standing?
And that house, we sold to John Mahoney.
Oh, that house.
Uh-huh. And then John sold it to another Williams family, Williams College family, Byron and Edith Scott, and they live there now. And everybody has loved the house, has improved it, so that it's in good condition. It ought to go on forever.
Mm-hmm. So you were resident of Canaan for how long?
We were resident of the town of Salisbury, and have been residents of the town of Salisbury ever since we moved.
But you paid your taxes?
We paid our taxes in Salisbury.
Oh, in Salisbury.
Yes, but we were in the Canaan telephone directory, 824, and we were in the Falls Village postal district, so that lots of people thought we were not Salisburyans.
Did you, you bought the house in
62.
And in 64 you came up
permanently.
Permanently. And what were you involved in when you came up here?
Dave and I had been living in my little house in Katona, New York, in Westchester County. And he'd commuted to New York from there. But his own house had been in Dobbs Ferry, and we sold that. And then I rented mine for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved with the town in any way when you came up in 64?
When we first came up, the Falls Village Canaan Historical Society was just getting underway. And we both were very interested in the local history. So we were on the board of that historical society. And David volunteered to be treasurer of the D.M. Hunt Memorial Library. And he remained in that position for at least 11 years, which was a wonderful service he did for them. Being a banker, instead of saying, hoard your money, he said, spend it, improve the library, buy what you need, put down carpeting, and so on. Mm-hmm. So that started the library off on its expansion.
It certainly is a nice
It's a beautiful library, yes.
Is that when you became involved in doing that little booklet you did on the Revolution?
Well, if you're talking about a small book, mm-hmm. Called Chronicles of Old Canaan.
That's the one.
The articles in it were written by Marie Collins Graham, who had lived in the area a long time, and they had been published in the Lure of the Litchfield Hills magazine. And the Historical Society decided that they would like to have it all put together as a book. And I edited it and did the maps for it. And the pictures came from the illustrations to her articles in the Lure. And the Lure editor was very cooperative in letting us use anything we wanted to for the book.
And who was Marie Collins?
Marie Collins Graham was the wife of Bob Graham. And she had been a teacher at the high school. I think she taught domestic science.
At the regional high school,
right. Yes. Mm-hmm. But and I believe she came from Collinsville, so her name was just one of the old family names from that part of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And for the Historical Society, I also did a lot of publicity. They were having very good programs every month. It was very active, and this was before the Salisbury Association really decided to be active, and before the Holly Williams House was given to the Salisbury Association. But as soon as the Holly Williams House began to be entertained as a local museum, that was in 72-73, I could hardly wait to get my finger in there and learn all about that wonderful house and the family. And I was very fortunate. Miss Marie Bourdon, who was very active in the Salisbury Association, asked me if I would be co-chairman of exhibits with John Weta.
Oh, yes.
And so John and I did a couple of early exhibits and tried to fix up exhibit places in the house that would be appropriate and attractive. And then John, for various reasons, one of them being that he just couldn't get the backing of the association to spend any money on the type of exhibit areas that we needed, he decided he would resign, and he was very busy with his own things anyway, so the exhibit program fell on me. As soon as we had emptied the attic, or inventoried the attic that was over the new part of the house, that's the part with the Greek portico in the front, then we began to have exhibits of some of the things we had found. And the first exhibit we had, we called a hat-o-rama.
A hat?
Hat-o-rama.
Uh-huh.
And there were so many old hats up in the attic, and then everybody wanted to loan old hats of theirs. And so I was able to borrow hats from all over Salisbury, some from the town of Cornwall, some from the town of Canaan. And the house was filled with hats, and we put them on wig models, which were these plastic heads.
Mm-hmm.
And we put them on radiators and on tables and on everything else.
How far,
it was wonderful.
How far back did the hats date?
Oh, the hats would date as far back as anybody had hats.
Revolutionary War?
And we had one that was about the time of the Revolutionary War and had probably been worn and owned by Luther Holly, who was the man who first had that property. And it's a tricorn, and his great-great-great-great-grandson, John Rudd, tried the hat on and it fit him exactly, and he said, "This must be Luther's hat. We have the same shape head." And then we had hats from the Civil War and from various periods. Men's hats as well as ladies' hats.
Do you know what happened to those hats?
We returned the ones we borrowed.
Oh, they were
all. And the ones that belonged in the house or had been given to us, we kept, and they're still there. Once in a while, they appear on some of the various mannequins that I made for the exhibits committee.
Mm-hmm. What other exhibits did you have?
Well, one of the best ones followed the hat-o-rama, and it was of clothes that Miss Margaret Williams and her mother had bought while they were on various trips. They had made a trip to France and England in 1928, and some of the lingerie that they had brought back still had common pins and little tiny store markers with how many francs this cost and how many francs that cost, because after they got back with these things and underpinning clothes suddenly changed styles, so a lot of these lovely things had never been worn. And we had bills of sale on everything they had bought, and at that time what's now the exhibits room, which is the old parlor of in the old part of the house. At that time, we had been given many old store counters. The Whitbecks were redoing their pharmacy, and so they gave us two, maybe three, big glass counters with sliding doors, and somebody else gave us another one. So we had them in the living room, we had them in the exhibits room, and could put all sorts of things in there for people to look at. And one of the things we did was to have two exhibits each summer And then we had a party to open the exhibit. And then, of course, people would come, and then they would tell about how excited they were about what was happening. And more clothes and treasures and so on poured in, so that the first 2 years, the collection of the Holly Williams House was really built up by people who had lovely things from all of Salisbury and wanted to give them and wanted to have them where they could be displayed. These were things that had been in their attics.
Great thing to do.
Yes.
What were your impressions of Salisbury? What was it like in the 60s? That is when you
In the 60s,
came?
Salisbury was just heavenly. It was the way Westchester County had been 50 years before. And the one of the remarkable things about the town of Salisbury and the feeling people have for it is that although more and more people have come in and more houses have been built on the country roads, it still has the same feeling of being a country village and not a commuting town, even though lots of people are commuting up here just for the weekend. It still keeps its original character.
In the 60s, were there any of the inns on Main Street next to the Holly House in that area still in existence? Or they were there earlier, but during the time you were
the
there.
Farnham Tavern.
The Farnham Tavern.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Was still, perhaps I'm antedating this a little bit, because I know when I brought my son up to the camp on Indian Lake.
Oh, yes.
In the 50s, we used to come over and eat at the Farnham Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably about the time in the 70s that the Holly Williams House was given to the Salisbury Association, the Farnham Tavern was being remade as apartments.
So that your first visit to this area was actually in the 50s when you brought your son.
Yes, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, what other impressions can you give me of the 60s?
Well, the 60s, so many people were oriented toward Tanglewood, and then there was also wonderful summer theater in Sharon.
Yes.
And there was also the concert series at Music Mountain, so that it was a place that was really very interesting culturally. There were so many different things to hear or to see, and I believe that about the same time in the 70s, the library began having art shows, and perhaps they'd had
yes.
them before, but I wasn't aware of them.
Yeah, I remember when we came up, which was 68,
mm-hmm.
the art shows were there.
Yes.
Yes.
And we had several art shows at the D.M. Hunt Library in Falls Village, too, mm-hmm. to which people from Salisbury came because they knew the artists who were featured in those shows.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that was such fun about moving up here was we started going to Trinity Church right away, which was down at the foot of Doug Way in Lime Rock. It was exactly 2 miles from our front door to the church. And two of the people who went to Trinity Church from the Amesville area were Harry and Miriam Cimino. Cimino. He was a very well-known artist. He had done war posters for World War I. He also was a wood carver, and he made the most beautiful illustrations for various books out of wood that he imported from Turkey from a special holly tree there that just gave a wonderful texture to the woodblocks that he made. And they had lived for quite a long while in Amesville on Sugar Hill. And they were good friends of Bedelia Falls and her husband C.B. Falls, whom I never met because he had died a few years before.
Was he an artist too?
And he was an artist
yes.
too, and he had brought Harry Cimino up there. So that there was almost an artist colony up on Sugar Hill Road. And because we got to know Bedelia and Harry and Miriam Cimino, we very soon learned some of the old legends and gossip of the area. And Miriam wrote a book that was going to be called Laughter on Sugar Hill, and she gave it to a publisher, and somehow or other the manuscript got lost. Mm-hmm. So now there are about 10 of us who are trying to revive our memories of those old stories, and some of them are people who lived there even in the 20s, and I've been taking down notes on what they say so that eventually there will be a new book, Laughter on Sugar Hill, and the story of Amesville.
Do you have an example in mind that you could tell us of one of the legends? Or
yes, one of the legends is when the power plant first came in around 1812, there were so many empty houses that had been used by the railroad and the earlier Ames Ironworks for their people. And of course, when the business left Amesville, the houses were left vacant as people moved to Torrington and other parts trying to find work. The power plant destroyed a lot of the houses. The cellar holes are still there. And a lot of people have done a little archaeological exploration on their own and found interesting things that were left in the old basements. They've also done archaeological exploration where the old Ames Ironworks and the railroad yards were, and have found some very interesting wrought iron things that were made by the Ames Ironworks.
Where was the Ames Ironworks?
The Ames Ironworks was on the mill pond above the falls, above the Great Falls. Oh. And at the time the Ames Ironworks started in 1832, there were two sets of falls. There was the Little Falls, which was, let's say 200 yards upstream from the Great Falls. And that was the falls that supplied the water power to the Ames Ironworks and to various other manufacturing centers around there. There had been a paper mill on the Salisbury side, and on the Canaan side, in what was called Canaan Falls, there had been ironworks, a lumber mill, a grist mill, and a fulling mill. So that was really a big industrial center all up around the mill pond.
Did you ever hear that the area around Amesville, Lime Rock, and so on was referred to as the Chicago of the East?
No, I never heard that. They probably thought it was going to be. Well, it was a very busy place. Mm-hmm. And had its own schoolhouse.
Where was the schoolhouse?
That's the building where Joanna Beals lives now. It is an A-line building just below the High Falls. And on a little brook called the Wachikastanook, that's the wrong name, I'll think. It's a brook that comes down off Falls Mountain and through Landon's Ravine, it's that brook. And her house is just to the north of that brook, toward the falls, and it's painted dark red now. And it has a double roof. The schoolhouse roof was covered over by somebody who wanted to enlarge the building and built the A-line window and put a second roof on top of the other. Mm-hmm. So to go back to one of the stories about the power plant coming in, the power plant not only dynamited or otherwise wrecked a lot of the houses where workers had lived for the Ames Iron Works and for the railroad. But they dynamited the little falls to enlarge the mill pond, and they built up the height of the Great Falls and moved it back a little bit so that it looks quite different now than it must have looked then. Well, the people who had stayed on in Amesville were just really hanging on by their fingernails. They had very little to do, though there was a farm that produced milk, and a lot of people worked there in the dairy.
Where
and then helped deliver the milk. Bob Graham was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that farm was up the road, up Housatonic River Road, north of Amesville. Let me see what else.
North of Amesville. Oh, yes, all right.
It would be north, going toward Route 44.
Right.
In fact, I think there were two or three big farms in that area.
There's
that sold produce all over.
There's one big one still there, of course. Kind of a gentleman.
Stillwater
farm.
Yes.
Farm.
Yeah. Yes. That's right.
They just did a lot of work on that.
Oh, yes.
That is so that all the industry went and the farm was...
And the agriculture kept on going. There had been even a bank in Amesville. But one thing I ought to correct, Amesville originally was the original Falls Village. Canaan Falls was on the Canaan side of the river. Falls Village was on the Salisbury side. When the railroad came in and a spur line was built over to the Ames Works in Falls Village, the railroad put the depot sign, the depot name, Falls Village, over in Canaan. Mm-hmm. So then people who lived in the original Falls Village, although there was a post office there called Falls Village and a post office in the new area across the river called Falls Village, gradually Amesville became the name of the settlement on the west side of the Housatonic River.
Can you place where the post office and depot were on the Salisbury side?
There was no depot on the Salisbury
side.
No. The post office was near where the old schoolhouse is.
Mm-hmm. Now, what happened to the people? Just moved out?
They had to. There was no work. And so the bank closed. It was the Salisbury Savings Bank and a branch of the one here,
mm-hmm.
an early branch.
Was there a grocery store there or a common store?
The house that was built in 1857 that we bought in 1962, was the big grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost like a supermarket, because downstairs there were the groceries in the big living room. When we first bought the house, we could still see the marks in the plaster where the shelves had been. And then upstairs there was a milliner, and in the room that's next to the garage, into which the garage opens now, there was a tinsmith, and he also had the little bridge that went across the Landon's Brook that had to be torn down because kids were playing in it and it wasn't safe for anybody to romp around on it. So it was torn down, but that lasted until almost the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that a grocery store there just before you moved in, or had it already
been? It hadn't been a grocery store for some time.
Right.
It was when everybody moved out, then something as big as the grocery store was no longer needed,
mm-hmm.
and it became the property of the Falls Village Savings Bank. And they rented parts of it to various families, and one of the families who had it in the 20s was the Blake family, and Ida Blake, who was a fixture in the community, was a wonderful woman, had lived in it when she was a little girl. And the bank didn't do much to fix it up. The roof leaked, and squirrels got in and rolled the black walnuts around, and were still doing it when we moved in. But the Temples, Henrietta and her husband, I can't remember, Paul Temple, had been a master at Hotchkiss, and they bought that house and lived in it and did a great deal to fix it up. But the person who had fixed it up most had been Mary Lambert, who had lived on Staten Island, and her sister had come up and had begun buying property that had all gone to the banks, and bought the whole corner for something like $2,000 with the house that had been the old Ensign Tavern, 1744 Tavern. It's got the date on it. And the house that we lived in, and some other houses and property. And so Mary Lambert took the house that we lived in, which was just falling apart. And her sister, Mrs. Groff, took the other one and fixed it up. But both of the houses were said to have homeless people living in them, and that one man who was living in one of the houses found that it was much safer to move down to the basement because the first floor boards were so rotten they were going to cave in if he continued living on the ground floor. Well, to go back to the power plant, because so many of the people were just eking out a living in the Amesville area, the power plant would not supply electricity to them, although they were supplying electricity everywhere. And finally, it happened that the manager of the power plant went on a vacation, and the man who took his place decided this is the time to let the power go to the people who want it, even if their deadbeats will still supply them with electricity. So the wires were strung up, everybody had lights to turn on by the time the manager got back. the people paid their bills, and he didn't turn off the power on them. One of the old houses that had been left by the power plant was just at the foot of Sugar Hill. Only the cellar hole is there now, and I think that's all filled in. But it was said to have the best well anywhere in the area, and the woman who lived there took in laundry from all over the town of Salisbury because the water was so good and her laundry was so clean.
And just to place Sugar Hill, is Sugar Hill the road that goes up towards where the Chappelle's...
That's Falls Mountain Road.
That's Falls Mountain.
Yes.
So Sugar Hill
is... So right by the bridge, directly uphill from the bridge,
right, is
now called Falls Mountain Road. It was called Peck's Hill Road when the Pecks owned the 1744 Ensign Tavern and ran it as a hotel. Mm-hmm. And so their name was on the road for a long time. And the road went all the way through to Farnham Road. It was the eastern end of Farnham Road.
It went all the way through?
Yes, and you can still walk it.
Oh, that's interesting. I'll have to try that. That's
yes. Good. You'll go by a private house, but mm-hmm. you can get through.
So I think the last house on that is owned by a professor
left.
From New York University.
Yes.
And
Bill Blackwell.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a path beyond.
And you can
that.
Go on beyond there.
Uh-huh.
It's not traveled as much now as it was for a while.
So Sugar Hill is the one then
and
that
Sugar
follows
Hill is
the
further
river.
Along toward 44.
That's the one that goes to 44, right?
Yes, and Sugar Hill goes up from the Falls area
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and goes up to the top And then its extension is now the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
But there were two ways that you could go on Sugar Hill from the Falls area. And one was over toward Hamlet Hill and down there by the Salisbury Garden Center. And also the Appalachian Trail. And then there was another one that forked left, went past the Butterley Farm, and came out just about where the ski jump is, so that you could, that was really the old shortcut to Salisbury. And connected with the river road, so that people who were visiting the area could go from the from Salisbury Center up over the hill that quick way, and then get the Falls area where the manufacturing was.
Mm-hmm.
Timothy Dwight was one of the people who did that.
Mm-hmm.
He visited here twice, and it's his description of the Great Falls that is quoted so often.
What are your impressions in terms of what changes come to your mind in relation to this whole area in the time you've lived here?
Well, I think two of the biggest things are the losing of the Berkshire Line Railroad, and of course of the Harlem Division in Millerton, because you used to be able to take a train from either station, Falls Village or Millerton, get into New York in a couple of hours, do what you wanted during the good part of the day, and get back in time for dinner here. It was really wonderful. And another big change is the building up of the village of Canaan with supermarkets. And that, of course, made a tremendous difference in the town of North Canaan. And it also made a tremendous difference in the shopping in Falls Village. When we moved to Falls Village, there was not only a railroad center, two banks, the Savings Bank and the National Iron Bank, but there was a fabric store, and there were two grocery stores that were complete: meat, cheese, green groceries, canned goods, and so on. And it was really just delightful. You didn't have to go far for anything.
You did your shopping then in Falls Village when you first got up.
But also came over to Salisbury to Shagroy.
Did you use any of the areas at Lime Rock? Were they in existence at that time?
At that time, all the stores that had been in Lime Rock were closed.
They all were.
And had all become dwellings.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I never saw Lime Rock when it had a big shopping center there. You know that gentleman? He's just gone up to his house over here.
I didn't notice.
Yes. Headmaster at Indian Motor.
He's on the Oral History Project with us.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's the secretary.
Oh, that's fine.
Yes, yes, indeed. He moved in recently.
Yes, yeah. During the summer.
Mm-hmm. What else comes to your mind that you might want to add, if anything? Any other people whom you haven't spoken about? Or?
Well, of course, Salisbury Center has attracted so many people, like Blagdens and and Harrison Salisbury and his wife. And then up around the Taconic area, I can't remember the name of it, but before the Taconic Learning Center was there, what was it called? The International something?
Oh, the Institute of World Affairs.
Institute of World Affairs.
Yes.
Was very, very important and
yes,
brought
indeed.
People from all over the world as students.
Yes.
And a lot of them have had an influence in world affairs since mm-hmm. they've grown up. One of the interesting things to me about Salisbury and Amesville and Falls Village was that it's so easy to get from here down to New Haven. And you can really see why this originally was part of New Haven Colony. And you get parts of the old post road as you're traveling down. But it's so easy to get down there to the things that are happening around Yale and in New Haven itself. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the attractions for us.
Yeah, by car it still is an easy ride.
Very.
Around Yale you can still park. And
if you know where.
Yeah, you have to find out where, that's right. But even the parking lots are so convenient.
Yes, they are.
Where the theater is.
Yes.
Let me see now, Nick, let's see if there's something else on my mind there. Are there any people that you know around the Amesville area particularly, we don't have too much material on that, who might be interviewed by us?
Oh, I would say Agatha Dakin, mm-hmm. because the Dakins moved here in the 20s.
Does she have a sister?
No, she doesn't.
Oh, she doesn't. Okay, then that's not
true. She's Mrs. Edward Dakin. Uh-huh. Ed died, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago. And she lives there, and her son Timothy has an office in the house, and he lives there too. Uh-huh. And she has wonderful stories. In fact, it was at her house that we had the first get-together of people from the area trying to remember things about old Amesville and old Falls Village. Then there are the Mortensons. There's Art Mortenson, who lives in Lime Rock, but has a summer house on one of the lakes, at Twin Lakes.
Where in Lime Rock is he?
He's on Main Street.
Oh, on Main Street in Lime Rock. Mm-hmm.
And he is just a fund of information, and he would be very good to have come. And he was a builder, so that he had a lot to do with the rebuilding of Stillwater Farm when the original house caught fire and burned down. Let's see who else. Well, there are two or three old families there.
I'm trying to think of a...
Begins with a B.
The one that lived behind Trinity, who died recently, rather a character that I had.
Hezekiah Goodwin.
Yes, I did interview
him. He was a dear friend, and I'm so glad you interviewed him.
Oh, that's some wonderful material.
Oh,
from
yes.
Him. Yes.
I used to get wonderful material from him, too. Then somebody else who knows a lot about the area is Ed Fales.
He's an artist.
And he is an artist and also a writer, but he now is concentrating more on his painting mm-hmm. than he is on his writing. Mm-hmm. But he's lived there a long time, and he has the old Borden Milk Factory. That's his house and studio.
Mm-hmm. All right, is there anything else that... comes to mind before we close this part?
Well, one of the people who was so very helpful, one of the families, was the Sabin family, and they lived up the Falls Mountain Road, just north of our second house, and they were very, very helpful because both sides of their family went back for generations, and their daughter lives on Lime Rock Road, I believe that's where she lives. I'll look up her name for you.
That's Sabin?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yes, I can't remember her married name
right.
at the moment.
Yes, I'd like to.
But she was very helpful, and she would have a lot to say. And
good.
Somebody else is Mrs. Mojong, who lives toward Route 44 from Stillwater Farm. She's the first little house as you turn down the Housatonic River Road from 44.
From 44 on the left-hand side, a yellow house.
Yes, it's a Swiss name, Mo
Young. Oh yes, I met her, in fact.
Yes, but she has a lot to say.
Uh-huh, good.
I wish I could think of that, the name of the family that begins with D. He's in the lumber business. He has a lumber mill.
Presently?
Yes.
Not the one on Route 7?
I think that's his, yes.
Oh, well,
but he lives on the Sugar Hill area.
Right. I know the man at the lumber, who bought the lumber mill there, so... All right, well, very good then. All right, let me just turn...